they're witches, but you know that's implied.
Got the storytelling, ego swelling, pillow talking, moonlight walking, sea hags.
Welcome to the Sea Hags Podcast. I am Chris Jeppa.
My name is Katie Norgren, and with us this week, oh boy, guys, oh boy, for our 1 year anniversary,
yay,
we've got the top dog of Vancouver comedy and podcasting. Oh my God. Top dog! Mr. Graham Clark is here!
Hello!
Wow. Top dog!
Woof!
Top dog. Woof indeed!
Very canine sensibility. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what to say. Me the top dog, I guess.
Well, with a pinky ring like that, nobody's gonna question it.
Are we gonna go right into pinky ring
talk?
Yeah,
why not? I have this beautiful cocktail ring.
It's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
Handed down from generations.
Yeah, it's a family heirloom. Mm-hmm. I got it.
At the house.
Yeah.
I got it at my grandfather, Herman and Mueller, whatever the fuck H&M stands for.
From Le Chateau.
Oh, wait.
Yeah, the house.
You got it?
I get it.
The old house.
Took me a minute.
Yeah. The castle? I don't know.
Yeah, but Graham needs some bling for just his everyday life.
Like, yeah.
It's got to be a little bit more sparkly, so he's going to buy it off me with whatever he's got in his pocket.
Yeah, I got my hand on a bill. In my pocket, or whatever it is, it's yours.
I still feel like even a bill is too much.
It's an A&W gift certificate.
I don't think I have any coins.
Canadian Tire money?
It might be.
Ooh.
But these are the terms you've agreed to.
Okay. Whip it out.
It's a 20.
Oh, that's too much.
That's way too much.
No, you know what? That was the deal. That was the deal.
It's too much, Graham.
No. That's the deal. I'm a man of my word.
Why don't you use that to go to the Laugh Gallery 4 times?
Okay.
There you go.
That sounds like a great
idea. Put it right back in Graham's pocket.
I will.
Well, thanks for having me. Thanks for my new ring.
Thanks for the $20.
Bye, you guys.
Fuck, he was playing us the whole time, this long time.
Yeah.
It was just to get into our sumptuous recording studio and steal whatever knickknacks he could get his grubby little mitts on.
This is a beautiful studio. This is really smartly done. Did you do this yourself? This is very cool.
Yeah, myself and my fella.
And have you described to your listeners what this place looks like?
The last few times people have been really into it.
Why don't you tell us what you see, Graham? Theater of the mind.
Well, it's the first thing you notice is that it's you have these like sound bafflers on the roof.
Yeah.
That are it looks like something that would be in a Chinese restaurant.
Yeah.
Like it's red with floral on it. So that's the vibe when I came in. It seems like this is like you're running a secret Chinese restaurant out of your house.
I've got dumplings and I've got opium.
Oh my God.
Dopium.
Why were opium dens, when you see photos of them, they look so
cool.
Yeah, so beautiful.
It looks so cool. Yeah. Like, how much do you kind of want to go to an opium den?
Right?
Like, a lot.
And then, like,
a fair bit.
Like a heroin, you know, like a house, flop house or whatever.
They don't call it a heroin den.
Yeah, they don't have fainting chairs.
A heroin conservatory.
It's just all mattresses on the floor. Like, when did opium become not the classy person's pursuit?
Yeah. Can we get back to artisanal opium?
Yes! Please!
Like, smoked out of beautifully carved pipes. Like, the super long pipes. So maybe something to do with the smoke and the haze, like...
But, like, you know, see people in these beautiful suits and dresses just zonked out.
Yeah.
But sitting on these, you know, ornate furniture.
Like, I think it's, like, the style of the furniture at the time anyway, and the style of the dress at the time. Like, you'd see those same people walking down the street.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
going to the dressmaker shop or whatever.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like, please, could you hurry it up? I have an appointment at the opium den.
It's
very exclusive.
Yeah.
I plan to be there for the next 16 hours.
I have a date with Lady Opium.
Yeah. It does seem, like, not to romanticize an orientalization or whatever,
fair.
But, like, it's really beautiful.
Yeah.
Seems like a pretty cool way to do drugs, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good.
Probably the best.
Probably the best way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll never...
I don't think doing drugs has ever been as classy, let's say.
Almost certainly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I wasn't at Studio 54 in the 1970s. If you have like a little gold spoon that you're just tooting some coke.
But still, putting it up your nose still just freaks me out a little bit and doesn't feel
like it.
There's something undignified about having to like snort it up your nose. Whereas if you're just smoking it in a beautiful pipe,
right,
it's just so like, it's much more passive.
But I do, you're right about the glamorous nature.
Cocaine.
Yeah.
Cocaine.
Apparently, like, Jack Nicholson at his house used to have just on his coffee table had this giant bowl, which is now filled with,
I think, Werther's Originals?
Yeah, like M&M's or something.
He's an old man.
Yeah.
That's the joke, Chris.
Yeah. But for real, like, I think it's M&M's now, but it used to be just
cocaine.
Pills.
Oh, wow.
Just grab a handful of pills at Nicholson's house.
I don't know if I could handle a mystery handful of pills.
No, I mean, probably not a lot of people could. You know what I mean?
You just have to be like, I've been watching that terrible show Lucifer a lot lately just because it's filmed here.
And what
Adam
is it?
Adam Pateman's in an episode
of
it.
Oh, wow, you've sold me.
Yeah, it's a horrible show and Adam Pateman's in one episode for 2 seconds. You're like, damn.
It's good, though.
I'm locked in for two. Is it good?
No, everyone's just really attractive.
So what is it? I assume it's about the devil.
Yeah. Yep, it's based out of the comic book that is by Mike Carey, I think, is the comic writer.
Nobody cares.
Okay, you know what? You're right. Nobody cares. One person cares, and they're really furious.
Yeah, they're going to try to email us, and I'm never
going to
read it.
No, they're not going to, because nobody's listening, but that's okay. It's based on, like, the devil in the comic book that was actually written by Neil Gaiman originally, but then it just, like, it was supposed to be this very David Bowie character, and in the show, it's just, like, it's basically Spike from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I figured out why I can't stop watching it. It's because it's, like, a terrible fake British character I used to love.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, like, a continuation of this, like, oh, I'm very bad. I'm also English. I'm at a piano. Do you want to touch my bum? You know, like,
and
that
he's
kind
very,
of thing.
Very direct about just
I'm
like
such a dangerous man.
Yeah, like I'm literally the devil, and everyone's like, "Oh, you're so silly and charming." He's like, "I'm literally telling you, I'm the devil, though." And they're just like, "Can we fuck?" And it's pretty good.
Oh, really? He's like a sex machine.
He's a Lothario.
He's a sex machine. Yeah, it's not a good show, but I don't even remember why I brought it up. But I think it was about drugs.
Oh, yeah,
it was about drugs. Mm-hmm. Cool. It was just like they were trying to solve a murder that was in Cloverdale, because it was
it's
in
like
Cloverdale.
It's like a crime procedural, but the devil is like the side character, and there's like the brassy cop lady who also used to be like an adult film star.
It's basically
so
Castle,
beautiful.
But instead of a writer, he's Satan.
Okay.
That's very good.
That's actually exactly
perfect.
What the show is.
Wow.
It's just Castle, but Satan instead of bad crime author. Played by Nathan Fillion. Slightly less charming lead as
so,
well.
So the supposition in this show is that if Satan were to walk the earth, he would solve crimes.
Yep.
Come
it's not
on.
A good show.
He would be making deals, you
well,
know?
Well, he does making starts. Deals. Yeah, and he runs
this cop
runs
lady,
a nightclub.
She's changing him.
Oh, wow, well, there
it's
we go.
It's a little bit of a Beauty and the Beast situation.
There's your
oldest time.
That's your 5-season arc right there.
Absolutely. It's crap. It's trash. But I've been watching, like, even Tessa really likes it. We don't watch bad shows usually, but I'm addicted to it. And there was an episode where it's like a Miley Cyrus type character. She's like a Disney Channel star. There's just a scene where she's just like, and she's just like, yeah. So I was thinking about the lack of dignity in it and how it's just like, it's so ravenous to snort cocaine. Just like snoot it right up in there.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, this is dead. This
but what you
lovely.
Were saying about like a tiny gold
spoon. Like a little gold
spoon,
like the Carrie Fisher style from back
yeah,
in the day.
Yeah, there were old, I can't even remember what magazine it was, but they were like this club culture magazine from the 70s and 80s that would advertise, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But they would advertise like coke accessories.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, in the back that you could order by mail.
Oh, yeah, and it just said, like, for your cocaine.
Yeah.
It was totally in Playboy. Like, those were in old Playboys.
Nice. Oh, was it old?
Oh, yeah. Well, they were in everything, but it was in old Playboys. I used to read my dad's old Playboys.
And it was like, get a little spoon.
Yeah. Or it was like, styling products for your pubes and a thing that will lick you. And, yeah, you're like, what magazine was this in?
Yeah.
But yeah, it totally had like coke accessories and stuff.
Yeah.
It's just like here's a silver straw for your little snoot.
The silver straw.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
or like a particular like a case that looks like if you open it up, it's like the cube from Hellraiser, but it's actually cocaine.
Mm.
You know, it's like a very meaningful box that you open up that has your drugs inside.
I got the voice of the guy from King of the Hill. Cocaine and cocaine accessories.
Hank Hill. That's
Hank
the guy.
Hill.
He's just selling cocaine and cocaine accessories,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
So drugs, don't do them.
Yeah.
Unless it's really cool.
I definitely heard stories about like when there was actually good cocaine that wasn't cut with bad stuff, and it's like, oh, then it doesn't hurt when you snort it, and it doesn't rot out the inside of your fucking nose, and it just like feels good, and you can have one line of it, and it, like, lasts the whole night, and the come down is not bad. Wow. And it's just because it's, like, bad, shitty cocaine. So, basically, legalize all drugs. And
let's control the quality, right? Because we're just getting, garbage,
the pure
right?
shit is apparently great, and it doesn't actually, like, harm you that
well,
much.
Guys, we've solved drug abuse. So, pretty well, successful podcast yeah, so far.
So, what else is we on got? The dot?
What other problems? Like, we've been doing this a year. We haven't quite solved all of the world's problems, so I guess we're going to have to do more episodes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, womp womp. So, Graham, you are the co-host of Stop Podcasting Yourself. Seamless transition.
Very nice.
I say, thank you. I've been doing this for a year.
It shows.
Thank you so much. So you guys started in, what, 2008?
Mm-hmm.
So what, like, when did it come out in 2008? Like, when did you put out your first episode?
It was a couple weeks ago was our official, like, nine...
It was like March 2nd or March 3rd or something. So very close to my birthday.
Mm. Yeah.
I know. That's why. Yeah. Thank you, by the way.
Yeah. So that was, you know, would have been the end of February, beginning of March.
That's nuts. And just like last week, you released episode 468 with Jenny Taves.
Yeah.
That's bonkers.
I know.
That's that many weeks has passed since you started.
Yeah. And we didn't...
Human beings have been born.
Yeah.
Way more than that have been born, but like to the two of you.
Dave and Abby also got married in that time. Yeah. And now they're a whole family unit.
That's
now.
Rude.
Yeah.
With beautiful children.
Oh, I know.
Thank you.
Yeah. But I don't know how they do it. Like it's insane. It seems like an insane amount of work.
For a podcast.
Yeah.
Much easier than babies.
Much easier. But we thought we would only do it for, you know, I don't think that we thought we would do it for a whole year. Because we were doing it before there was this, now there's such a big audience mm-hmm. for podcasts, you know, and like, mm-hmm. But back then there wasn't. So we just thought, well, we'll do it and see if anybody ever listens. And then it just kind of. And it's one of those things. Now we've just done it for 9 years. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you, like, do you want to stop? No, it seems
enjoyable.
Like...
That's good. It seems like you guys have fun
after
all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love doing it. Like, I love doing Sea Hags with you, Chris.
Mm-hmm. Aww.
Mm-hmm. But, like, there have been weeks I haven't wanted to do it, but never have I wanted to stop completely. Like, mm-hmm. there are just weeks where I kind of would rather not do the same thing. And,
yeah.
You know, but...
And that's part of it. That is part of it.
Pushing through a little bit.
Yeah, I think with anything, right?
Oh,
like, it's not automatic that you want to do it. And then also, like, stuff gets in the way, right?
Like human babies.
Yeah, human babies. And, you know, people, you get sick and mm-hmm. People cancel. Yeah, you leave for, people go on vacation. So it is like, there's all these things that kind of are in the way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it's the doing it in the weeks that you don't really want to do it is the only challenge. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally I do. We haven't had many of those so far. I mean, we haven't exhausted our group of friends yet to make them come and be on our show, but we started branching out a little bit more.
Yeah.
Like a wrestler. Pretty cool last week. That was some good-ass networking, Chris.
Thanks, babe.
It's scary to branch out, right?
Mm-hmm.
To ask people to come because it's easier when it's your friends. Yeah. Or what if they come and they don't get it, they don't like it or whatever, because that'll happen, you mm-hmm. know? Or like you say, people cancel at the last minute and you've done all this effort to get them on the show or whatever. But it's good. It's good to branch out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
And I would be lying if I said Stop Podcasting Yourself wasn't a huge inspiration for us. I think I started listening in 2010 or something like that, which is like the first podcast I ever heard of.
I know.
I was
telling Graham in the car that it was the first podcast I ever listened to.
Oh, wow.
And so it was because of our friend Caitlin Fontana,
very,
very good friend of ours. And she was like, I'm on this thing. And I was like, well, I miss you. Like, you haven't really been in town, so I want to hear your voice. And I remember walking from the McDonald's up on Cassiar.
Yeah.
Walking down and listening to it and just, like, stopping and, like, doubled over with laughter at, like, the bus stop. Just like, what the fuck is this? This is so funny. These guys are so silly. Like, it was really awesome. So from there, I just, like, went back and, like, started near the beginning and just, like, listened to the whole archive while I was working night shifts at a homeless shelter.
So,
just, like, it just kept me going through, like, the night shifts, and then the morning when I was, like, cleaning and making beds, I would be, like, singing, like, Celebrity Crush Hat, just, like, you know, so those things, like, it really sustained me, and then I got to learn about, like, this whole scene of local comedy that I never knew existed, because I was never really plugged into it.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, wait, those weird improv guys that I used to go to school with are, like, doing really cool, funny stuff now, and, like, now I'm going to go to that show, and I just, like, got super into comedy again, so.
This really city good. Is, it's this really weird anomaly as far as cities go in terms of how good the comedy scene is. Like, it's a big city like Toronto or New York or Chicago or whatever, you automatically expect that to just be part of the culture. But here is not, we're not as big a city, but the per capita, the amount of great comics here is, it's outrageous. Like, people here don't know how good they have it.
Yeah. And when people...
they really don't.
People tell me, because I talk about stand-up comedy a lot now, and just, oh, I was so excited, and I saw this amazing show, and this person was so funny, and blah, 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 and they're like, oh, like, you know, I went to the Comedy Mix, and I didn't really like it.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, there's, like, in the back of a Cuban restaurant, your show, like, once a fucking week, you're gonna get some primo stuff, like, and there's stuff all over the city.
Yeah.
Every night of the week, sometimes multiple places. Like, if you wanted to go see comedy every night, you'd have to toss a coin and, like, choose, right? Like, there's so many
They would
cool
actually
shows.
Be difficult choices in many cases, too.
Yeah.
So, I think we're really lucky.
It's too bad, because, like, the club comedy is good, but it is for a very specific taste. So, you know, a lot of people will go to a club show and they won't like it because it is a certain type of comedy.
Yeah.
And then they say something outrageous like, I don't like comedy. And
oh,
you're
God.
Like,
it's heartbreaking.
What does that even mean?
That's a repulsive thing someone could say to me. It's like, oh, I don't like comedy. I'm just like, we're done here, pretty much.
You have
I
no soul?
I don't own it. It's like someone saying they don't like music.
Exactly.
I mean, like, I get it if you're not super into it, but to say you don't like it, like, that's absurd to me. Like, I hate laughter and joy.
I hate food. You know?
I just want to eat Soylent forever.
Yeah,
guaranteed those are the same people. Who don't like comedy. It's like, I just wish I didn't have to think about food. I'm going to drink a goo. I'm going to drink nutrient goo.
There is... I could see the appeal of drinking
Listen
a nutrient
to white noise.
Goo. I like just sounds.
Yeah,
I like
I'm just
sounds.
Gonna, I'm just going to be in a float tank. The only thing I like is Joe Rogan's podcast.
Is he a float tank guy?
Yeah.
He's like, do acid and go into a float tank.
Like, do acid. Put DMT. Put yak butter in your coffee. Don't ever eat a carb. Punch people in the face several days a week for your health.
Wow. He's a
lot to deal with.
He's an eccentric fellow, this Joe Rogan.
He's quite a bit to take in.
Because I've only ever seen his podcast, like, if there's some controversial guest that I'll watch on YouTube or whatever. So I don't really know anything about Joe Rogan, except that he's, like, super, he's all muscles.
Yeah, he's a beef.
Yeah, he's like a huge beef, right?
He's a big beefman. Thank you. That's your beef eater.
Yeah, and he... I know that he, whatever, UFC, I know he's involved in that, but I don't really know what, but he's like, he does float.
I can watch like 2 minutes at a time, because I know this guy from high school, I hope to God he's not listening, that would be weird if he was, who's super, he named his cat after Joe Rogan.
What did he name his cat?
Rogan.
Oh, okay. I thought he named his cat Joe Rogan.
Well, maybe the other cat's name is Joe. I don't know. Like, he's a really cool guy, but he's very, like, easily influenced by things, and so he's, like, taken on Joe's vibe. He's like, I'm doing kettlebell swings in the morning. I'm putting butter in my coffee.
So, like, what is this butter in the coffee thing? I don't understand.
It's
it.
Something about paleo diet or something.
Oh,
like, you're not going
to. You know how cavemen put butter in their coffee all the time, right?
You know, cavemen go to CrossFit and, like, roll a big tire up a hill.
Oh, boy.
Even before the wheel was invented, so it was harder.
Yeah. Oh, well, imagine pushing just a square up the hill. Why would they have squares? They didn't have wheels, but they had squares.
Like this is an idea in the making. This is a work in progress.
Probably a round rock.
Pretty sure. Graham, is your entire understanding of, like, prehistoric society based on Far Side cartoons?
Not Far Side, but you know those BC comics?
Yes.
Yeah, mostly that.
Those, okay.
Yeah. Like, there'd be a guy riding around on a wheel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the cool guy.
But, like, isn't Joe Rogan's also into, like, the ayahuasca, DMT?
Yeah, like... he's, like, a big psycho... He's a big psycho? No, that's not fair. I don't even really have an opinion on him other than he's a lot.
Yeah, but like doing the psychedelic stuff to understand
spirituality,
but like microdosing LSD for like increased awesomeness. Like,
see, now this is a term I assume I know what microdosing means, but
like taking just a little bit of acid so you're not like fucked, but you're just like a little bit less inhibited, a little bit more thinking abstractly. Like they say that they microdose in Silicon Valley.
that shows like Joe Rogan influence, I feel like. Just that whole vibe.
I just mean in the actual like Silicon Valley.
Oh.
Like apparently that's a thing where
meant the TV show.
Yeah. Like at Google they would like encourage people to microdose with LSD because then you have like abstract ideas. You can like come up with cool, you know, innovative ways of thinking and ways of doing things and programming and blah. Apparently that's a thing. I don't know if it's true.
Wow.
Sergey, why don't you take a microdose of LSD and then have a quickie in the nap pod and then see what your brain comes up.
Oh yeah, they have nap pods. Yeah. I'm really excited about that.
They're trying to like establish the perfect conditions for maximum creativity.
Yeah, they're like 4-hour bodying everybody,
which I think is so interesting for like, you know, us as creative people that then also have like day jobs in the real world and a lot of things to contend with. That maybe the conditions that we try to create when we're trying to write or whatever, it's like it's really hard to like get to that place. But these guys are working in an environment where all the conditions are like perfect, all their every need is like accounted for. There's like food, there's sleeping, there's like everything that you could possibly want, games and whatever. To like,
don't you feel like a part of, or I've always felt a part of the creative process is that opposition.
Because, I think so.
I think, you know, the grind is a part of, that's what keeps you able to do it. And that's why, you know, you see a lot of people who have, you know, great success. And then all of a sudden the product is not, it's not as potent as on the way up because they're really grinding it.
Yeah.
And now they have everything at their disposal. And in some cases that creates, you know, this, you know, unimaginable work. And in other cases, like, the work becomes kind of flabby.
But yeah, absolutely.
I wonder if it's a difference, though, between, like, creativity where it's supposed to be an expression of emotion, like, some kind of writing or music, whereas, like, the creativity that, like, your web design, app design, I don't know what I'm talking about. What do they do down there? They, like, build tech.
Drugs. They sell drugs.
Like,
they microdose.
Their stuff is so, like, it's a...
programming,
technology and like creating stuff that you've never thought of before. It's not trying to like relate to the human condition. It's trying to make something that like is so out there.
But it is kind of because, you know, like Steve Jobs, who's written about endlessly, his thing was very much like, how does this relate to the person?
Okay.
You know, like, and I think that's what any company like Google or whatever, they want it to be seamless in your life, you know? And so but how would you know what people are doing unless you're out at the grocery store or, you know, waiting for the bus? How do you know? If you're living in this fantasy Willy Wonka land, like, how are you producing anything that, you know, somebody who works at Walmart's gonna need?
Yeah, well,
how are you gonna know?
You
know?
Nothing.
That's what Ed always says. He's like, he's very much a Luddite, and he's like, you know what they should do is test the new, like, updates for the iPhone on jerks like me that, like, hate all of this and don't know how to use it and just get so frustrated there's ever a new change. Like, I should be their target demographic of who they're testing this stuff on.
Well, it's true, though, because that's the bulk of the people who are going to use any given, you know, software or whatever is going to be somebody who uses it as a tool, but it's not their whole being, right? They need it for email or they need it for Facebook or whatever, and then that's it. Then they go on with their day. So yeah, it seems weird to me that you would have these people who are like, you know, this nap pods. I mean, I'm crazy about the idea of nap pods. I really don't understand why, as a culture, we have nowhere that a person could go and take a nap. Do you know what I mean?
Like siesta culture. Wasn't there something that Spain was trying to get rid of the siesta? And that was, like, such a tragedy?
Yeah, well, they definitely didn't, because when I was there 2 years ago, I was in Spain.
Oh! Were you running with the bulls?
España. No, I went to Barcelona.
Oh, Barcelona.
Not Pamplona.
Oh,
my God.
fucking, I'm such a dick. No, I just went to visit my sister-in-law because she was living there for a while. Number one, that city's so not accessible. If you can't walk, fuck you, basically.
Oh, really? It's all cars?
It's like everything. No. Everything is stairs, and they're this narrow, right? Like, it's very difficult. But the other thing about it was that everything just shuts down between, like, 1 and 4.
Yeah.
It's so civilized.
It is so, but like in Tokyo, I've been told, I haven't been to Tokyo, but that there are, you can pay and go in these
capsule hotels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, like sometimes you're downtown, you're working and you've got this block of time mm-hmm. before the next thing, but it's not enough to go home.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So why can't, in a modern society, in 2017, why can't I go into a place and for $4 just go have a nap? For half an hour.
I don't know why you can't have that. That's not
why
fair.
Why can't I have that?
Come on, Gregor Robertson. Get it together. Great.
Yeah. It seems like something like somebody who was writing about the future in the 60s would have imagined, oh, of course we'll have that. Mm-hmm. You'd just be able to get into a pod and sleep and feel refreshed. And we're still not there
I
yet.
I like it if it like filled the whole thing with like ether or something like that so I can actually take a nap. Because I'm terrible.
You can't nap?
I'm a very bad sleeper.
How about you? Nap?
Oh, yeah.
She's so good at sleeping. I hate you. I don't. I love you.
I'm not a good sleeper either, but I can nap. I can get...
You look like you could probably take a good nap.
Yeah,
you look like you could put that hat just down on your face and just, like, interlace them fingers and just...
But sleeping at night, it's a horror show.
No.
I can't do it.
It's garbage.
Yeah, it is garbage.
It's for dicks.
Yeah.
I hate it so much. I go to bed at like 9:30 and then I wake up at 2 a.m. and I'm like, all right, we're up for 3 hours. What are we doing?
What do you do at
that
time?
It's a reverse siesta.
Yeah.
Do you do the thing where it's like if you got into like medieval times, you would start your bread at that time or something?
Yeah, like the
get up and
cycle.
Start some bread? That's not a bad
idea.
Just
start the yeast, do a couple of rises, and then by the time then you wake up again, you put it in the oven.
Make a big old loaf of challah. Yeah. No, I generally get up and like... think about all the ways in which I'm not a good person yet.
Sure.
All the ways I'm failing as a performer and a comedian and all those kinds of fun
and
things.
And then you're thinking about
I look
how
at my
everybody
jokes and I'm like,
else
these
is,
suck and
yeah.
everybody else is so much better
everybody
than me.
Everybody else is doing so much better than me.
Yeah,
and,
pretty
yeah.
much. Basically.
That's
a great... Do you ever like to spend your waking hours like that?
Yeah. Like, when I can't sleep, And I mean, I think it's the same for everybody who has, like, insomnia. And I grew up in a household of insomniacs, so both my parents are bad sleepers as well. They wander around the house all night. And you can't, there's no upside. There's no, you can't get up and read. You can't get up, I mean, you can read, but it's not enjoyable.
Yeah, it's not a fun time for creativity.
No, you can't get anything done. Like, you can try. And I've certainly been like, you know what? Just, I'll sleep when I sleep, and I kind of tried to live like that for a while.
Like Leonardo da Vinci?
Yeah. Like, I'll just, whenever I'm tired, then I'll sleep, because I have kind of a loosey-goosey schedule, and, but those hours in the night, your brain doesn't want to be up, mm-hmm. but you can't shut it down.
No, it's like, what do you think about this, fuckface? You having a good time? I'm your brain!
Yeah.
Sucker. That's what the top-down process is for me, anyway.
Have you done, like, because I've done all of the things that people say to do, and, you know, you keep, create your bed is, like, just a sleep zone, and don't look at screens, and don't eat, and don't do this, and take this, and I've done all of the things, and it's...
Yeah, there's only one thing that works for me.
What's that?
Hardcore, heavy-duty marijuana extracts.
Okay, I thought you were going to say heavy-duty, like, so it was going to be like a sex thing or something.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
And then I'm out like a light.
Just like a good old fisting.
Yeah, like
it just puts me out like a baby.
A good old sea hags fisting.
Both of you guys were, like, doing the fist motion before you even, like...
Like, I knew it was fisting was coming in the conversation. I just felt it. I have a fist sense.
Yeah, there we go. Well, this has been the Sea Hags podcast. Everybody.
And we're done forever.
We quit.
We made it. We did it. This whole year has been building to this.
No, I use that. I use an edible extract that is made for cancer patients, actually. It's called Phoenix Tears, and I put it in a Starburst.
It's called what tears?
Phoenix Tears. So, like, the thing that you get in Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember what they're for. Something good. But you put it in, like, a Starburst sandwich, because it's very waxy, so it gets stuck in your teeth, so you have a little candy, and you go to bed.
So they come as a candy?
Nope. It comes in like a syringe of goo, and then you put the goo on the candy, and then you eat the candy.
Does it taste good?
No. The candy tastes great, but the extract is very weedy.
Yeah.
But boy howdy, clang. Like, I'm gone. I'm out for 7 to 8 hours. It's pretty incredible. Yeah.
So then that's all you need then?
Yeah, basically. Like, but that means I have to like be kind of stoned in the morning all the time, pretty much. Just like a little bit.
It lingers.
Just a little bit. Okay. Just till like 9 or so. If I'm up at 7:30, it's like till 9, and I'm like, I'm awake now. It's all good.
Mm.
I just got my job permanently, so I don't feel so uncomfortable about saying that anymore. Thank you very much. It was only 5 years to get a real job, like a real person.
But like the feeling of having a night of sleep, mm-hmm. like right through.
Yeah.
Is incredible.
Oh, it's, yeah, better than any drug.
Like you do it all the time. Yeah. It is really
you
like... You
don't even know how good you have it.
I guess. I just really love bed and I really love sleep.
Oh,
like,
me too. Oh, there's I love it. Yeah, there's nothing I love.
We just have a very dysfunctional relationship, mm-hmm. me and sleep.
Yeah, I just like, for a while, like I am easing out, so I don't know, maybe as I get older it'll be harder to sleep more, because like I used to be able to sleep... I would, like, wake up in the morning and then be able to roll over and fall back asleep, and then I would just, like, wake up every hour and could just sleep until, like, 5 p.m.
Yeah, I can do that.
Constantly sleep.
I can constantly sleep after a night of bad sleep.
Okay.
I can do what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Like, I can kind of wake up and be like, fuck it, and just go back to sleep. But that doesn't feel restful. No, that just feels like...
gross.
It feels gross.
But I would do that over top of a full night of sleep as well, so it was, like, extra...
That's you're pretty, like a bear.
Pretty luxurious.
That's like
basically
a
little Polish bear.
Yeah.
That's in like the garden what, eating turnips and then sleeping
in
the cave.
Yeah, that's what a bear or a lion would do.
Cool.
Like just,
I'm into it.
Yeah, yeah.
But as I've gotten older, now that I'm in my 30s, I found that I can't do the sleep-in thing. I have to get up when I'm awake or else I just feel disgusting otherwise.
But that's, I think, more of a function of having a job.
Yeah, probably.
Because...
But even on the weekends?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
you just train your body to
do it. Because I don't know, I could sleep in forever and ever, but I never feel good.
Hmm.
So I always try and just, whenever I get up, try and get up, but, mm-hmm. but I, yeah, sleep is, man, it is, I've been chasing it my whole
life.
Chase
that dragon.
Yeah.
Now, if we had an opium den, I bet you could sleep pretty good.
Oh, yeah, sister, preach.
And here's the podcast where the sea hags fucking get Graham hooked on heroin.
Yeah.
We really could trace it back to just us.
Yeah, just
being
the
problem. The
end of, like, all of our favorite comedy things in town just from this one day.
Yeah.
Get everybody hooked on really old-style opium.
Jesus Christ. The sea hags opium den would be pretty fun, though.
Yeah,
it
absolutely.
Would,
not gonna lie.
Yeah.
We'd have really good snacks, too.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to run a den, why not, mm-hmm. right?
Peanut-free. We want to be inclusive of everybody.
Bless your heart.
Well, that's another thing that I was kind of thinking about was just about podcasts in general is the weird intimacy that it creates with people you don't actually know
mm-hmm.
who listen to your show, who feel like they know you really well.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, this is maybe the fifth time we've spoken face-to-face.
You've been on the show, The Laugh Gallery.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah, but we've only met, like, a few times. Mm-hmm. But I've been listening to your show for, like, 7 years.
Yeah.
So I know a lot about you. Like, I know what you're allergic to.
Yeah.
Is
a lot of
thing.
People do.
It's yeah. Pretty... Well, it's just like how much easier is it for people to show you love, though? It's like, well, Graham can't have those.
That'll be
bad for him.
And every town I go to, somebody will... write and say, here are the best vegetarian places in town.
Mm.
Yeah. We're just lucky that we have an audience that has gravitated towards the podcast that are incredibly sweet people. I mean, uniformly. I've never had anything that I would consider like a bad...
experience?
No! Like, yeah. I mean, I feel like... the Maximum Fun Network is that's kind of the brand is like they want to be inclusive and it's supposed to be this kind of really friendly space, but it almost blows my mind. I'm like, it can't be as friendly as
where's the sinister underbelly?
Yeah,
there's
gotta
be a catch.
And I think it's all these.
It's not Griffin McElroy. He's the evilest one.
Somebody's gotta be the right. But, like, I feel like pre-internet, you would maybe find the 2 or 3 people in your town that were into that kind of vibe. And now you can connect all these people in different cities and towns. And so it has the potential to be like a very bad thing and also a very good thing.
But it's been mostly a positive.
For us, it's been absolutely.
I can only imagine that the worst thing is that it's sometimes awkward. Like, somebody gets really excited and maybe starts to cry or something like
that.
There's
just been
like
some
of that. The people just get very jacked up and are very socially awkward. Because, like, let's be honest, people who like comedy, by and large, are, like, a little bit off in some ways. Like,
they're a different breed.
Being drawn to something that is, like, an expression of individuality and, like a bit of a twist on what a regular expectation would be, like, that, I think, draws those kinds of people. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you get people who are just like, I love you so much. like, okay, great, thanks. Yeah. Like, how do you really respond to somebody who's like, oh my God, I love you. Like, I've never met you before.
anytime that it's been like that, we're just like, well, we just will chat, you know?
Yeah.
And eventually, that just goes away.
You take some of the, like, the heightened anxiety out of the, like, first part of it.
I would think so.
Exposure therapy a little
bit. Because I met people that I was like that for.
Mm-hmm. Who? I'm so curious.
One of the big ones was when I met Bruce McCullough.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he is... tell me if this gets boring, but...
I doubt it.
When
he's one of my favorites for sure.
Okay.
I've had a crush on him since I was like 8. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, he, when I was a teenager, and it's probably the same thing for you guys, is like I said, like back pre kind of internet, if you were a comedy person, you had to kind of just find the other person that also loved comedy and knew the great movies and the this bit from that thing.
Yeah.
And so my friend in high school, this guy named Brad Wood, he was one of the guys that really got comedy.
Right.
And the other guy I knew was Ryan Noe. He lived down the street. And Brad Wood and I, we went to see Bruce McCullough do his one-man show called Slightly Bigger Cities, which we saw when I was 16.
Wow.
And it was... You know, like, I already love stand-up comedy, and I already, like, knew kind of everything you could know about comedy lore at the time. But 96. Seeing... 96. Yeah, I saw Bruce McCullough, and it was just like... I was like, I can't believe that was a comedy show, what I saw. Because it was... it was poetic, and it was... there was a real... kind of emotion in there, but it was also screamingly funny.
Nice.
And so I remember seeing that, and it really changed my mind about, it was seeing him and seeing Janine Garofalo on TV were the two things where I was like, oh, like stand-up comedy can be all these different things. Because up until that point, I had like, you know, watched Seinfeld or George Carlin, but it was a very one thing. It was all jokes.
Yeah.
And then Janine Garofalo gets up there. She's kind of, it seems like she's...
Like a pad of paper.
Yeah, she's working stuff out. But it's just as funny as anything else.
Oh, yeah.
And Bruce McCullough was, you know, he's jumping from like a little scene to like a monologue to a song. And I was like, but this is as funny as anything. And so, yeah, meeting him years later at a festival was very...
Big.
It was huge.
Yeah.
And he was instantly funny. That was the greatest thing, because I met him, and I said, I'm a big fan of yours. And he was there with his wife, and he said, did you meet my wife? Do you think she's a bitch? And I was like, that is the funniest thing that anybody could have said. And it just put everything at ease.
Oh, my God.
And,
yeah.
Oh, my God. And it was perfectly him. And it was perfect. So, you know, that resonates in my head as being like a...
Oh, man.
He's got such a little face. Like, you know what I mean?
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
It's just like, it's just so, like, sweet. Mm-hmm. So that anything he says is doubly funny. Because it's either going to be, like, cutesy, sweet, weird, like Gavin from Kids in the Hall, or it's going to be something really fucking left field, bizarro world stuff.
And his album that he put out, Shame Based Man, which was...
it's a good title.
It is still, like, one of the best comedy albums I've ever heard.
I gotta get that. Shame Based Man?
Yeah, and he did a follow-up, which I like just as much, but it's not... it's not, I would recommend Shame Based Man over the other one. But yeah, Drunk Baby Project is the second one. And, it's great too. But anyways, yeah, getting to meet him was like that. And I thought I was going to be a guy that, you know, gushed, but... because he made it so funny right away. It was like, oh, this is fine.
I wonder if that's like a learned tactic where it's like, I know how to diffuse the tension right away and like make people feel at ease, or if that's just naturally how he just
I think he's just naturally that way. I think he's just like a really funny, weirdo.
Did he do the podcast when he was in town?
No, this was in...
He was here recently. He was going to punk at Laugh Lines, I think.
Yeah, no, I couldn't.
No, you had Scott Thompson on.
We did have Scott Thompson on. Yeah, we
that
tried.
Was really nice.
I actually haven't gotten to that episode yet.
Yeah, it was fun.
Because I can't decide who my favorite kid is, honestly. Mm-hmm. It always just cycles between all five of them.
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's this guy today. No, it's that guy. It's almost always Scott Thompson, though.
And I got to, at different points, I'm lucky. I've got to meet all of them at a different point. You know? You
collected the whole set.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny. Like, none of them... are anything but like these real down earth Canadian boys.
That's it, right?
It really is. Like, that's there's totally. No.
How many airs can you put on as like a Canadian comedian? I wonder.
Well, that's well, we were talking about that. I can't remember who was talking about that with, but I was talking about it the other night with somebody about it. There's a quality to the Canadian artist that is like. I was saying, like, if the Tragically Hip were a band from the States, they would have broken up decades ago.
Sure.
Just because there's this kind of, you know, if they were an American band, there's this kind of individualism or something that would have gotten in the way. Mm. But in Canada, it's like, no, we're a bunch of nice boys. We're a team. We're all working together. Like, that's why the kids in the hall, they're still together. Mm-hmm. They still do tours. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, the Bare Naked Ladies are still writing albums. And
Stephen Page did leave.
He did leave.
Coke problem.
Well, he's got his own thing going.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. there is a kind of... It's a bit intangible, but
there's a gentleness to it, I think, that is hard to pin down. I think intangible is the right word for sure, but there's like a soft accessibility of it that comes from having a small country, well, a large physical country, but a small population.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the ratio of famous people to regulars is so much more generous.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You know, famous to regular ratio. Yeah. Regulars.
Regulars. And also there's no, you know, like, because we're living now in a culture where people are talking very frequently about what is a Canadian value or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that there is a set that anybody could agree on, but there's definitely, like, a vibe that everybody's like, we all know what it is. Yeah.
It's like friendly self-effacement. Like, it's not really, it's not self-hating. No. But you're like, I'm a silly boy.
Yeah, this is all very silly.
It's all like, it's awareness of the artifice of art, I guess, and an acknowledgement of like, yeah, I know I'm not like laying pipe in Fort McMurray right now. Like, I know what I'm doing, but we're having fun, right? Like, we're all in on it.
Like, this is fun and and I don't know, like, it's even you know, like Russell Peters is one of the, you know, most famous comedians in the world. Mm-hmm. And he still is a guy that you have no problem picturing going shopping at the mall.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he's not, like, even though he lives in America, he lives in L.A., but if you saw him at a mall in Brampton, you wouldn't be like, what's he doing? Like, you'd be like, oh, there's Russell Peters.
Victoria Beckham or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like, even though he's, like, the most famous guy, if you saw him at a Humpty's restaurant, you'd be like, yeah, uh-huh.
Yep. Like, how did I get to this Humpty's? What even is a Humpty's?
Oh, Humpty's is kind of like a, like, maybe on the prairies. No, it's like a Denny's.
Oh! I've totally been there. Of course I have. That's where my in-laws live in Saskatoon.
Yeah.
They live in a Humpty's.
They've subdivided a Humpty's. They live on the left-hand side of the... Great views. They live in the T's.
Great views.
Great views.
The fries are a little soggy, but it's okay.
When I was a kid... I found a shirt at a garage sale. My dad, God bless him. Like, just, like, he was the Hank Hill to my Bobby Hill.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah. Like, just always like, oh, my son. And I found this shirt that was a Humpty shirt that had two fried eggs where the breasts would be. No. And it said, I got laid at Humpty's. And I was like, I'm buying this shirt. My dad was like, no. And I bought it. I wore it to school. I thought it was the funniest thing.
The eggs are my boobs.
Do you guys get this? Do you guys get the levels at work here? Also, it's Humpty's, a place where you get eggs.
I would have, like, taken a Sharpie and written, like, the Humpty's dance is your chance. Like to do the, to, on the back, to do the hump. Do the hump, do the Humpty hump. There's a lot of room on that shirt. I wear an XL usually, so.
And know. It's like, I understand me buying it at a garage sale. I don't understand who bought it at the Humpty's. After their breakfast, was like, well, let's get a shirt.
They were so inspired.
Yeah.
Well, like, in another 7 years, we're going to see a bunch of t-shirts from, like, the eatery that just say, me so horny, turning up at all of the value villages everywhere. Yeah. And imagine how cheeky that was in, like, 2003. Definitely people were buying baby tees of it.
Yeah.
I had the underpants
and then
for
texting
a long time.
On their sidekicks.
Yeah. Yeah.
In retrospect, super racist.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Extremely so.
Well, I think that's what gave it its flavor.
A little zing, yeah, little wasabi. Little
that's the umami flavor.
Yeah.
That's a little.
That's the sixth. Yeah. That's the sixth flavor. The fifth flavor. Do we want to use that excuse to take a break?
Yes, let's.
We're back.
Hi.
Where did we go?
We went downstairs to get more beer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is the IPA that they called Dank.
It is Dank.
Oh, my God. It smells super like weed.
So, yeah. according to Michael at the beer store, hops and, like, marijuana buds are cousins. They kind of look the same. So, the same way that you would have, like, a sticky dank nug, you could have it of hops or weed.
And super, super smells like weed.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
And it does. It tastes, I would say, dank is the word.
Yeah, so that's some dank ass.
But like,
shit.
It's not like a super bitter beer though. You can still like, it still has flavor. It doesn't like kill your palate. So I was quite surprised. I got to sample it today. Yeah. Normally, I would never buy a double IPA, but
here we are.
I was convinced.
We're all trying something new today.
Yeah, yeah,
absolutely. Anyway, we were just before we came back on mic, we were just talking about, well, for some reason, the Bob Seger song Night Moves, and it was just very interesting because Graham brought it up, and that song factored very heavily into the day that we conceptualized the podcast, which we haven't, I don't think, talked about since our first, or a 00 episode, The Hagening, as it was titled.
The Hagening.
The Hagening, where we were on a beach with several other cool ladies, probably not doing mushrooms.
Not totally microdosing.
Totally not doing anything. And definitely not drinking, you know, rosé out of the bottle and goat cheese and things. And seeing, you know.
We ball hard.
Yeah, we do. And there was a transient orca whale just like arcing through the water. It was a pretty magical goddamn day, if I may say so myself. And everybody else saw it. It wasn't just me. Like,
No, sure.
So it was there was definitely a whale. For sure it wasn't like a police car driving by or something like that.
Or a log.
Yeah, no, it was pretty spectacular. So that was the day that we came up with the podcast. But then when we finally packed up to leave, you were giving everybody a ride back to their campsite. Mm-hmm. And
I had responsibly stopped drinking rosé much earlier.
And microdosing.
Nice.
Yeah, the mushrooms had passed out of my system.
And we cranked on the radio, and it was just the beginning of Night Moves by Bob Seger. And so we just turned it right up, and I convinced everybody to sing Night Boobs instead of Night Moves because I'm a very grown-up
adult. Yeah.
And we were just howling it on the highway in Roberts Creek. It was really spectacular. So that's just made me think of that. And I was like, holy shit, this is a year. This is our 1 year episode.
Wow. And it all started with a little dose of Seger.
Yeah.
Well, all good things.
Microdosing Bob Seger.
Yeah. A little microdose of Seger. That'll get you where you're going.
You don't need the whole best of album, that's for sure. There's really only two or three songs that you need.
Have you ever seen, there was this crazy movie, I think from the 80s, called American Pop. And it was, I don't know what the name of the technology is, but it was
rotoscoping?
I think it was rotoscoping. Is it like
when they draw over cells that have already been?
Yeah. So it's fantastic, this movie.
I've never heard of that.
It follows just kind of like musicians through these different decades. Mm-hmm. Not the same musician, but just kind of like every scene, every decade kind of revolves around the music of that
era.
It's
a Ralph Bakshi movie.
Is it? Who's that?
He's the guy who did Cool World.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. Yeah, this, so anyways, the big, like, final song in the movie is Night Moves.
That's a good one. Oh, it's got the languages English, Hebrew, Russian, and Yiddish.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. Okay, cool. The film tells the story of four generations of a Russian Jewish immigrant family of musicians whose careers parallel the history of American popular music. That sounds great.
That sounds really
The majority
cool.
of this film's animation was completed through rotoscoping. It's weird that I didn't know what movie it was, but I knew what you meant.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. Like, and the music in it is amazing, and but the kind of the big final kind of number is Night Moves.
Nice.
Yeah.
Night Moves.
Yeah.
Oh, he also did Fritz the Cat.
Oh, yeah, which I was obsessed with when
Me
I was a teenager.
Me, too.
Yeah.
Showtime, the super dirty version of it.
Yeah.
Where it would just be like, what am I even watching? This is like a weird sex cartoon. Like, I really hope my mom doesn't open her bedroom door, which is right near where the TV is.
Oh,
like,
that was unfortunate.
Yeah.
Unfortunate mom's door placement. But I was obsessed with the whole Robert Crumb, you know, adult
big,
comic.
Big, fat leg butt
yeah,
girls.
Yeah, yeah.
I like them too.
Yeah, yeah. And then
it's a good look.
And then got into Harvey Pekar and all that stuff.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So it's like, I don't know. I hope that kids are still—they're probably still discovering that stuff. I mean, it wasn't of my time; it was of earlier, and I discovered it.
I think those types of comics are really making a serious comeback. You know, like it's one of those things, like, kind of like podcasting in a way that is a bit of a niche these days. Like, it's no longer. It's not like a few people become very widespread anymore. It's like there are sort of pockets of, like, Kate Beaton is one that I think of.
Yeah.
She's a Canadian comic artist who is a very lovely person also.
Yes.
And her comics are like a mix of autobiography and history and stuff. And they're really, really fascinating and interesting, beautifully drawn, that kind of stuff. And I definitely, like, Tumblr definitely is a great platform for those kinds of things. Instagram as well, for just like a visual medium to see these, like, storytelling through a visual art form, which I'm really, really interested in. I mean, I like comic books, like comics, but I also am really interested in people, like, putting these things out independently that are not, like, super big produced with, like, a bunch of different people working on
it, right?
Like, it's not a commission thing. It's people making their own art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's what Harvey Pekar and all the others.
I think he kind of, he certainly started that autobiographical comic
thing. And Alison Bechdel, who is, like, a very famous lesbian cartoonist, who does the same thing. It's very much the same, like, the autobiographical comics, which I love. I think they're really great. Mm-hmm. I like just hearing about people's lives all the time, pretty much. Like, I've heard
why we do this.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've heard people say, like, well, that's garbage if your art is just your own life, right? Like, that's just, you're cheating, you're not being creative
at all.
But
it's the only original thing that you can really do.
it's the only thing I can tap into without worrying that people are going to think I'm hack.
Yeah. And it is, it's the old adage is that you write what you know. And so,
you know,
what do you know better than your own life? And
well, I know that women be shopping.
Yeah, well, ladies be shopping. Update it. You know, it's not just women, it's ladies.
Which is a much broader category than women. Chicks be shopping.
Yeah, well, absolutely, chicks be shopping. But they always be shopping.
And broads don't belong in broadcasting.
I disagree. See, this is now.
Broads in podcasting.
Yeah. Pods don't belong in podcasting.
I'm pretty sure that was just a UHF quote, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, that was a great movie. I mean, for the time.
It's truly a Twinkie Wiener sandwich of movies. Oh, I'm getting toasty.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else a little sweaty? Yeah.
We were just thinking about how hot the studio is going to get. Like, we've had this, like, weird, crazy snowpocalypse in Vancouver, and it's actually made it tolerable to be in the studio because it's so fucking cold outside.
I think it's perfect. Yeah.
So, Chris.
What?
What's going on with you lately?
Oh, really?
No, I was gonna say
halfway through the end of the podcast.
Yeah. No, I mean we normally do a check in at the beginning, but why bother if we don't need to?
I got to chase Justin Trudeau around town last week.
Oh, that's kind of exciting.
It's my boss is the basically she's kind of in charge of some downtown Eastside stuff. And Justin Trudeau was coming to the downtown east side to talk about the fentanyl crisis. And he was going in this, like, secret closed-door meeting. And it's like, why don't you want to meet with any other people besides this, like, secret closed-door meeting? And so we thought that Christy Clark was going to be there, too. And so my boss was like, it's shitty that I didn't get invited because this is my turf. So then we fucking tried to find him, and we drove around town, and we chased him down, and we found where there was, like, 12 black Suburbans full of army guys just, like, hanging out in front of this clinic. And so we're like, he's obviously in there. So we walk up, and my boss just, like, walks up to the RCMP officer and is like, who's in charge? I need to get into that meeting. So ballsy. So amazing.
Wow.
And of course, they didn't let us.
Oh, no.
But it was really inspiring.
Zest only goes so far.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, no, technically, you cannot come in. But then we did see him leave.
Yeah.
And he, like, waved a little bit. Got into a Suburban and, like, drove away, and then we tried to break into his press conference, but they also wouldn't let us, but we sure did try.
Is he trying to do something about the fentanyl?
Yeah, situation? So...
He's trying to get a good photo op about
it. So, like, the health minister, Jane Philpott, is really on, like, let's make injection sites totally legal everywhere, and like, harm reduction, whatever. Trudeau had that kind of thing where he was like, well, I need to go there to actually see it for myself, and it's like... Do you really have such, like, an empathy gap that you can't trust what everyone's telling you? And right. there are, like, photos, and there are, like, people's life experiences and accounts, but it's like, no,
account
I need to...
of the corpses.
Yeah, yeah, there's, like, 1,000 people died last year from fentanyl overdoses.
But isn't it, like, it feels like it's kind of cool that at least he's like, I want to go.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely a huge change up from, like, Stephen Harper being like, everyone should be in jail that ever touches a drug.
Yeah, yeah, like, it's
we
kinda,
narrow drug pour moi.
It's kind of cool that, you know, like, I mean, like you say, it would be nice if he took just the stories and whatever, but the fact that he's like, yeah, I want to go down and see it, like, it's pretty good.
I agree. I feel like I can get into my, like, cynical brain a little bit where I'm like... doesn't go far enough, but that's what bugs me about some activists in general, so I'm kind of replicating the same thing. It is really cool that he came down. I was a little bummed that he went to, like, a secret closed-door meeting with academics, and then he said, and frontline workers, a.k.a. the chief of police and the chief of, like, the fire department.
Right.
Like, those aren't the frontline workers. And he went on a ride-along with the cops to, like, drive through the downtown east side, but never got out of his car, never met anybody.
Right.
Never met a drug user and ever, like, stepped out to go visit some of the staff that are, like, killing themselves working down there, like, just...
Right,
when
yeah.
When we saw him leave, we were standing with community members and all these frontline workers at this research place, and they were like, Trudeau, like, come and say anything to us, and he was just like, and, like, ducked into his car.
Right.
It's like, it would have been so fucking cool if he would have stopped and gone and, like, shaken some people's hands.
Do you think
like
they can? Or is there, like, because that's what I always wonder about this stuff, like, just security-wise.
There was a huge, like, space between him and everyone else that the RCMP had set up a barricade.
Right.
So I'm sure that he can't, because who knows?
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, like, I mean, that's control. The perfect opportunity, even just if somebody wanted to, you know,
throw a pie in his
face. Exactly.
Whatever,
yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. It's true.
I mean, I don't know.
I was a little bit bummed out, though, because I thought that he would, like, include folks that have been working on this for a really long time, and it just seemed like it was a little far removed from what's going on. But you're actually bringing me around a little bit to be like, it is pretty... He's coming all the way from Ottawa.
And absolutely, like, it's always going to be, especially with politicians, it's always going to be that way. Like, there's, you know, there's going to be these... you know, grassroots politicians that are rolling up their sleeves and doing the work.
I need to see the prime minister. No, ma'am, you can't.
I think you can at a certain level, and then there's a certain level where you become a target. You know what I mean? And, like, so it'd be cool. Like, I'm sure he would love to go, you know, hang out for a night and see what's going on. But I'm sure, like, people are like, yeah, but people might try and kill you. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure a lot of politicians, that's kind of the trade-off. Because what they got into it for was to be helping the people. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, as you get up that ladder, you become more of a target.
Yeah, you know, you're actually so right. Because I've seen the change even in just the way that I interact with folks, where I used to be very much a, like, roll-up-my-sleeves outreach worker, and now that I'm, like, working in politics, I'm like, here's how the systems work, and here's how you have to navigate them.
Yeah.
And people are like, why don't you just pick up the phone and fucking help me? And I'm like, well, I can't really do that, because here's the procedure, and here's
the way
that
goes. Yeah, this
is
how it works.
I can teach you how it works, and I can go with you every step of the way, but we do need to do this, because otherwise, if I pick up the phone, the person on the other line will be like, why didn't you do this, 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 and this before you got to me? And it's like, well, that makes the person look like you can just write them off.
Well, and on top of it, too, I know that I've, like, heard people say, well, you know, they're just doing this as a photo op. And I'm like, yeah, they are, to a certain extent. But also, like, you don't really want your prime minister, like, picking up garbage, right? Like, you actually do want him doing prime minister things.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's you know, it's good for him to come and, like, he wants to hang out and check out and have meetings. That's great. But, like, the photo op stuff is like, but you don't actually want your prime minister putting in an 8-hour shift picking up garbage. Like, we can hire somebody.
8 hours of cutting ribbons with big scissors. That's what I want to see. That's what I paid my taxes for.
But it's so, yeah, it is true. There's definitely been moments where I give an answer where I'm like, oh my God, I sound like a politician now, because it's like, well, we can't commit on this or that because of that, because I actually know what some of the inner workings are, and why we don't have an answer for this yet is because of XYZ, and it's too hard to explain, or I try to explain it and people are like, fuck you. You signed up for this. You should be like, I should be able to scream at you and I should be able to grab you. Like, woo, so I kind of get having like a security barricade.
And also, you know what, the
damn one, you, Graham Clark, bringing nuance to this podcast.
Also, I think one of the things that you realize the farther up you go in anything, mm-hmm, is that you find out that the things that you thought would be explosive kind of truth, it's all very mundane. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's, you know, like conspiracy theories really latch on to, well, it's this and that. And then if you knew the actual truth, it's just so boring that you don't even want to hear it. You know, like, yeah, it's like, well, why can't I have this thing? And it's like, well, because of this 9-point, you know, protracted problem. Yeah. That's why. It's like, not because I want to... You know, it's not because the Canadian government's in with the cartel or something. It's like, no, because if we legalize them, we've got this trade embargo with the states.
And then the committee has to go through the committee
process. And they're, yeah, how do we implement this with Health Canada? And that's a different department. And it's all just very boring, bureaucratic, hard to digest kind of stuff.
And, like, I'm a person that watches Question Period for fun. And even I get bored when they get to, like, order of the day, like business of the day, like committee shit is so boring.
Yeah, and it's, but I think
I listened to them do the, it was the amendment to the Animal Cruelty Act, and it took 2 hours of debate and they still didn't even finish.
Yeah.
And it was basically, let's not be bad to animals.
Exactly.
Just like a 6-year-old write it on crayon? But I like horses.
But you're getting to watch in the States. Mm-hmm. Firsthand, you're starting to see people realizing that there's these giant mechanics that aren't just bureaucracy because bureaucracy is fun to have. Mm-hmm. There's reasons why these things these systems are developed. And so then, you know, you got this guy who wants to do things immediately. And it's like, oh, it's not because every other president wanted to wait. It's because there's all these crazy fucking, you know what I mean? Like, it's this crazy giant machine, and you can't go in and just blow it up.
Yeah, people get really upset if you try to do that, and then it doesn't work.
And then it doesn't work. It would be one thing if you're like, well, we gotta just clean it out. But it's like going into a clock and being like, I'm cleaning out all these gears, but it's not gonna tell time anymore, you know? Like, it may look fine, but it's not gonna fucking work.
This is some fucking brilliant.
I think you solved another thing too.
All right, we did drugs. We fixed that. We fixed government.
Yeah.
Guys, we're on a roll. Killing it tonight. What do you feel about world hunger? Like, what are we going to do about that? More GMOs!
The whole, like, honestly, yeah, the world hunger thing is, it will be the marker on which our generation is going to be most harshly judged. Because any other generation, there was a war, or there was real... Like
scarcity.
And this is the first generation where we literally have enough for everybody.
More than enough for everybody.
And we throw so much fucking stuff away all the time.
Yeah.
And we aren't, you know, actually, but our generation, that was what we're going to have to answer for in history. Why? And in that insane way that, like, when you look kind of in medieval history and you're like, oh, the aristocracy
had everything,
and then there were people literally dying in the streets. Mm-hmm. That's what we have now.
Fine, no problem.
That is happening.
Yeah.
The exact same thing is happening. Mm-hmm. Turns out human beings can be very selfish when they are not forced to share.
But it's also, do you think it's selfish, or do you just think it's like real just ignorance? Like, do you think it's actually, like...
Lack of empathy, big time.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
And that, I mean, that's a type of ignorance, right? It's just, like, failing to understand that other people have experiences just as varied and rich as you do.
Right.
Like, every single individual person in the world has this crazy, complex life in the same way that you do. And trying to process that all at once is, like, the last 20 minutes of 2001 A Space Odyssey, right? Like, it's just, it's incomprehensible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And frustrating, and it makes you mad.
Yeah, yeah.
So exactly like the last 20 minutes of 2001 A Space Odyssey.
But, like...
it's very frustrating to try to think about that, because you're like, oh, no, I care, but, no, I can't shut down, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
it's
self-preservation
yeah.
in some ways, and it is, which is a type of selfishness, I think. But it's also understandable. Like, the thing is, I have empathy for the people who don't have empathy.
No,
which
I...
is fucked.
But I do, too, because it's like, you know, so much of everyday life is just, like, getting by, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you try and think at the end of the day where you've been at work all day and, you know, if you're somebody you're taking care of kids or what, or maybe a sick family member, who mm-hmm. knows what, you know? And then, like, it's like, can you even spare a thought? For some country you've never even heard of before mm-hmm. that's having some crazy famine.
Yeah.
It is a weird time because we, for the first time in a long time, we have instant access yeah. to those parts of the world that before were abstract.
Yeah.
You know, like if you didn't see it on the news, it didn't exist.
But and now it's like literally you get live updates from someone's Twitter.
Yeah.
About like this awful
what's happening
thing
in Aleppo or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, but then you do feel this paralysis set in because, you know, today it's Aleppo, tomorrow it's this thing, and
yeah.
or there's somebody in your own community that needs mm-hmm. fundraising or, and so you feel like I can't. It's that thing where
anything.
You feel like I have so much to do, I'm gonna do none of it. I'm just gonna walk away from all of it.
Yeah.
Instead of chipping away, you know, which is hard to do,
mm-hmm.
I think.
This episode went way more deep than I expected it to so far, and I just, like, it's really, there's a lot of similarities between the episode we did with Avery 2 weeks ago.
That's, I was telling Graham in the car on the way about, like, the kitchen being central to social movement.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
her big thing was, like, you have to have
a project, a
life project, and she said, don't just have one, because if that doesn't work, then you're fucked, but, like, if you have, like,
yeah.
two life projects that you can work on, and, like, these are the two causes that I really am dedicated to, or the two actions that I'm going to be doing
mm-hmm.
that improve people's lives,
yeah.
and that's what I'm going to pour all of my energy into, like, that's
yeah.
really awesome, because you can't do it all, because you just won't do anything.
Yeah, and it's, I think it's also, you know, there's this, like, there's this feeling, like, that if you can't do all, then doing a little is just, why bother?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, like kind of, you think about it like, the, you know, like if somebody's a vegetarian, they've gone all in on not eating meat. But somebody who eats meat feels like, well, I guess I can't, I don't want to be a vegetarian, but also I care about animals. And it's like, well, so just maybe eat meat like once a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, you could scale it.
Yeah.
But people don't, they
the
really
sort of,
do want these absolutes.
The sort of binary thinking that,
all
like, gets a lot of...
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And people get on, you know, like, a philanthropist's ass about, you know, they're like, well, if you're such a good philanthropist, why do you do that?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, but you can be two things. Mm-hmm. Everybody can be, you know, like, I think of... you know, Caitlyn Jenner
mm-hmm.
is an inspiration to a generation of trans people,
mm-hmm.
and also an asshole. You know what I mean? Like, also a terrible,
yeah.
terrible person.
Oh, yes.
But you can be both.
Chef kissy fingers, as ever. That's so perfect. That is, like, the refrain of my household. Absolutely. It's like, oh, yeah, great. Also a dick, like a total asshole.
Absolutely, but you can be both, you know,
yeah.
and people have
so much nuance in this episode. We thought it would come from us. It's coming from you. You're stealing our flavor.
But I do think people think, like, you know, you either have to be, you know, Terry Fox, Or you have to be Donald Trump. Like, there's no room in there.
It's very binary thinking.
Yeah.
This is something that I was thinking when I was trying to think of, like, what are we going to talk about tonight? When I was trying to, because, like, we don't prepare things usually for the podcast, but I was like, this one's got to be good. And so far, so good, I think. But I was thinking about all or nothing thinking, because it's something that's been really bothering me lately, and I don't mean to, like, shift it from big world talk stand-up comedy or whatever, but, like, I've been really thinking about that lately, because the last few months, not to get too deep or anything, I've just been depressed. I haven't been able to, like, force myself to go out and, like, drive for 40 minutes to go to the nearest place where I can go and do comedy or whatever. So I've only gone up, like, a handful of times since the New Year's, and I feel bad about it. And I'm like, oh, I'm not a real comic, and I'm not, like, blah, blah, blah. But I still write, I still do the podcast and stuff, but it's this idea that, like, I don't count, like, everybody thinks I'm stupid because I'm not there all the time, right. You know, like, just this idea that...
you're not all in, you're not grinding every single night doing it.
Exactly, whatever. And we've talked about this a lot on the podcast, because it's a thing that I have a lot of issues with, because it's like, sometimes you do something because you like it, not because you want to make your career out of it, right? Like, people who play pickup hockey aren't trying to get into the NHL necessarily. I'm not trying to be featured on Just for Laughs next week or something, but I still think of myself as being part of the comedy community in Vancouver. But there's always this discourse of, like, you don't get to call yourself a comic until you've been doing comedy for 15 years or whatever. Or, like, you don't, like, you're not really anything until you've got, like, 45 minutes or something like that. Right. So it's just, like, absolutely there's a hierarchy, and absolutely you have to commit, and absolutely you have to have good material and stuff like that. But there is... it's a step system. It's not like you either are or you are not.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's... I mean, it's like anything else. I mean, I think the big thing when it comes to, like, new comics is, what is your level of reverence for the form?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're content to do comedy for a year and go, I'm a comic, just like, you know, just like Louis C.K. is a comic, then I'm like, maybe you don't have the requisite reverence for it, and maybe that's what I think people bristle at.
It's respect, like, it for is, all the hard is. Work that people have put in for a long time, and not really acknowledging the behind-the-scenes stuff that they don't see.
Yeah.
They just see, he goes up on stage and talk, and I go up on stage and talk, and... they don't recognize, like, the actual work that happens behind the scenes.
Yeah, and I think it's okay when you're starting out. I did, when I was starting out, call myself an amateur comedian.
Mm-hmm.
And as you would if you were a photographer or somebody who was, you know, trying to be an expert in wine or whatever, you'd say, I'm an amateur, because you're new. And it's not, the connotation is not negative. It's that you're new, and that you're like, I'm getting into this, and I love it, and I want to get better at it. But attaching that label to yourself kind of lets everybody else know that you get it. But if you walk in and say, because I've had people say, well, I'm a comic, and I'm like, well, from this city? Because then why do I not know who you are?
Yeah.
You know? And it's a little bit... like, you get why that's upsetting, that would walk in and be, I'm a comic, like you. And I'm like, yeah, you will be.
You will be one day.
Yeah,
I absolutely. Generally, what I usually say is that I do comedy, not that I am a comic. Like, I do stand up, but I'm an amateur. Like, I always qualify it, because, like, sometimes Tessa will interview, like, she's a stand-up, she's great. I'm like, you're very biased. I appreciate that. I am an amateur. Please come see me anyway.
There's also no formula, you know?
No.
There isn't. And there's certainly a popular narrative that people love to, you know, they love a certain story of how a comedian is or comes to be, or whatever.
How Bill becomes a law.
Yeah. But there is no one way in or out, or what is and is not a comedian. I mean, it really is about, do you go on stage? Do you work to make the audience laugh? I mean, that's it.
That's all it is.
Yeah, so it's not, there is no, it's not, you know, a very rigid process.
No.
Whereas if you were somebody that was like, I want to be a carpenter, you really do have to do, like, these 10 things or whatever they are to be a carpenter. But comedian is very amorphous, you know?
This is really good stuff. I feel like that really takes me out of it a bit, but You're pretty wise, Graham. I don't know if you know that about
But it is tough, like, I mean, because you do, especially when you're getting into a thing, and I think it's the same music or whatever, mm-hmm. you just want to be in it. Yes. You just want to be all in it all the time. And, you know, it's great if you start when you're really young, because you can do that.
Yeah, you have the, and it's like, that's how you're going to make your group of friends, whereas, like, sometimes you're like, as like an older adult, you're like, I have my group of friends and they don't do this thing, and so I have to divide my time. Whereas when you're young and you're starting out, you're just like, all my friends are here at the thing that I'm doing all the time and we all love it together.
Yeah.
It's like way easier to be there all the time because you want to hang out with your friends as well.
Well, and you know, one of the best comics that Vancouver has ever seen, this guy named Irwin Barker, who's passed away. Oh.
Still gonna look him up?
Yeah, absolutely do. He was one of the most brilliant comics and very beloved in Canada, mm-hmm. and he really only started his career, he was a teacher and he had kids, and his kids grew up, and he decided to become a comedian full time, and he got into it. He was from Saskatchewan originally and then moved out here, and just very smart, but got into it as an older man, mm-hmm. and you know, really worked really, really hard to kind of become a great comedian. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like he'd already had this other whole life.
It's a lot of material to pull from.
But none of his material is about that.
Really?
No. No, he was...
No.
Yeah, all his stuff was very... He was like a professor. Like he would take on... subjects, and they were very mathematical. His jokes were, he really was kind of like, and he would play the Urban Well, which was all, you know, drunk 25-year-old kids, and he would destroy, and it worked completely clean, you know, and he kind of his last gig, he got cancer, and that's why he passed away. His last gig, he was a writer on the Rick Mercer Report.
Oh, wow.
He worked for years and years on This Hour's 22 Minutes. And
damn.
Yeah, but, you know, this is a guy who didn't come into it until he was in his, you know, like a middle-aged guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, I think it is, it's the spirit that you present yourself mm-hmm. with is the most kind of important thing, you know. And so he wanted to be a comedian and... And he fucking did it. And he was the best. You know, he was one of the best guys.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah.
That's really wonderful. That's good to hear. It's hard to start something later in life. Yeah. I mean, there are things I don't find that difficult because I don't find it hard to talk to people. Like, I'm not shy.
No.
I'll introduce myself to someone. And if they don't like me, that sucks, but I'll live. Like, I'm not that socially anxious. So great. But I definitely have this sense of like, you need to kind of shoulder and elbow your way in a little bit. Like, you can't wait for people to be nice to you, which I hate because I just want to be very passive all the time.
Yeah.
So I don't want to, like, be aggressive and then be like, oh, we don't like you, actually. I was like, oh, okay, well, I'll take my ball and go home, right?
Yeah.
So that thing is really hard because you have to actively put yourself into it and then, you know, be vulnerable mm-hmm. by putting yourself up on stage and, like, this is my material that I wrote, and if it sucks, then I have only myself to blame.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So it's a scary thing, and it's harder to do when you're older, when you've already had all these experiences of humiliation.
Yeah.
You're like, uh-oh, I know this.
Oh, no, this is very familiar.
No, yeah. But it is, it's a necessary part. I mean, there's just no way around.
No.
I mean,
no.
That's...
You don't get to run a marathon without sweating and shitting your pants occasionally. Yeah.
And it is funny because, like... it's very unifying that, because
mm-hmm.
that is the experience of everybody that gets into it. It has to be weird like that, mainly to weed out the people who are doing this as a neat, like, you know, weekender kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Or like, I'm pretty sure I'm good at this.
Yeah, I mean, like, a lot of the guys, everybody I started with doesn't do comedy anymore, you know? So, and that's the natural process of... I think any art is people fall off and they, like you say, if your kind of life is, you know what, I'd rather be spending time with my friends, then you're not going to pursue you know, something where you're going out with a group of strangers and it's weird and it's, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it is a very specific thing to kind of spend your time on.
And apparently there are people who just straight up don't like it at all.
Sure.
Don't like comedy.
Oh, boy.
Hate it. It's stupid. I hate laughter.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know, it, like, it's such a weird pursuit. I love anybody that tries to do it, but I think anybody that has any kind of, like, real passion for it understands that they have to go through the rigors.
Unpleasantness.
Yeah, mm-hmm, I mean, it's, you know, and the unpleasantness, what it is, changes from year to year.
Yeah.
Like, comedy now is a completely different thing than when I started.
Yeah.
It's like the scene and the politics and the whole world of comedy, you wouldn't recognize.
The content is completely different.
Content and the way that people access it and what, just what it stands for. And it's a whole different world.
I feel like there's more, and I don't know if that's just my own impression and my own projection, but I feel like there's more of a group of, there's more of a subset of comedy that wants it to be a force for good. I don't think that it's something that it needs to be, but I like that that's happening. That's something I enjoy.
I think it's always, I think comedy and you know, wanting to do good, I feel, has always been bedfellows. Because, like, you know, in the 80s, it was comic relief. And, you know, in the 70s, it was Jerry Lewis's telethon. And, like, it really, like, and, you know, even in, like, World War II and Vietnam, the USO tours, like, comedy always has been, like, at least in the North American Western kind of context, I don't know the rest of the world, but has been about, like, that kind of very basic, like, I like making people happy, you know? And so that mutates into different kind of forms or whatever. But I always find, like, comedians, they will always do a set for a charity thing. They will always donate their time. Always. Like, I don't know about other, I assume it's the same with a lot of musicians. And But I know with comedians.
I know
comedians,
that I do with my own, like, if there's a cause that I'm into, I will definitely. But I've, trying to book fundraising gigs, I've definitely come up against a lot of, like, you need to pay me for my time. You need to respect all the work. And I'm like, I get that, because I've also been there, and I've done all that work, but I know that if it's a cause that I really, like, am into, then I will definitely donate my time. Anyway.
Yeah,
there's,
no.
There's
yeah,
a lot of, like,
I understand that.
So much more equipment when it comes to music, though.
It is true. And it's like, it has to be, you know, make sure that everything is right so that you can do what you have agreed to do. But with comedy, like, honest to God, anytime there's been a fundraiser, there's no cajoling or anything. It's just,
well, I mean, it's stage time.
Well, I mean, there's also that, right? I mean, it is always, it's, are you kidding me? It's stage time. Of course
I'm
gonna say,
are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I'm sold hand.
And it's a gala with people that would never normally see stand-up, like, comedy.
I don't know, guys. I booked a paying gig for this Saturday.
And did you?
Yeah, oh, good Morgan Payton booked me. I get $20 in drink tickets.
Yay!
Here in town?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, at some film festival at the Vancouver Cinematheque or whatever.
Nice!
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that'll be good. It's the best thing about comedy is that if you're nice, people will probably book you. Like, if you're nice and at least somewhat funny, people will have you on. And Morgan likes me, so she'll book me for things. So, like, great. Awesome.
That was
so simple.
Brent Butt, years ago at the Urban Well, said,
he had to become a comedian, didn't he? With
I
a name
think
like
so.
Brent Butt.
Well, the rest of his family, he's got all sorts of brothers
and
sisters.
They're all named Butt.
Yeah, and they're not all comedians.
They've adapted differently.
Yeah. But he said to me very early on, he was like, if you are going to be in comedy, you have to either be nice to be around or you have to be brilliant. But
or some mix thereof.
Yeah, but you can't have you can't have neither.
Yeah.
You can't be unpleasant and unfunny.
Yeah, like, you will not succeed.
No,
at all.
But you can be unpleasant, but if you're really funny, you'll get, you know, X amount of gigs.
Yeah.
And if you're not really funny, but you're really fun to be around, you'll also get the same amount of gigs as the brilliant, unpleasant person.
Just trying to figure out where to put the slider on the equalizer
at
all times, you know? Like, I'm trying to be funnier.
But
nice is working pretty well.
And you know what? It's I think that's no matter what the business, mm-hmm. people would rather work with people they like mm-hmm. than, you know, somebody yeah. who's going to blow things up and it's going to be revolutionary. I think everybody would just rather work with somebody who's like mm-hmm. dependable and
who
nice.
Shows up on time yeah. and is ready.
Yeah.
Well, that's like, yeah. I come back to this a lot. That was my lesson that Todd Glass taught me, where it's like I was his musician during the comedy festival with a very talented but not very nice co-musical or whatever, co-musician.
Right. Yeah.
And Todd was like, I don't like this guy's vibe. And he was like, Chris, I think you could just do the whole thing yourself, and here's a lesson for you. Like, they don't have to be that talented. It's better if they're more fun to hang out with.
Absolutely.
Because this isn't, like, some high-stakes gig. I don't need you to be perfect. I just want you to, like, fuck around on stage before I get there. Like,
yeah.
pick someone that you want to hang out with instead of this guy that's causing all this tension. And so he's yeah. like, do you want me to give him the boot? I'll give him the boot. I'm like, thanks, Todd Glass.
But it's absolutely...
so true.
It's so true. Mm-hmm. Because you're almost never going to be in the circumstance where you need the person who's the best. You know?
Yeah. They're like, probably doing their own thing in
yeah.
their own way.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it really is. Mm-hmm. The, like, being just, like, professional and, like, nice to work with. Oh, my God.
It goes a long way.
It goes forever.
I think about that quite a bit, because, I mean, like, I feel like I'm putting more into producing than I am into performing these days, because I do a monthly show. You've done it.
Mm-hmm.
You did our first
yep.
one. We'll have you back.
All
right. Okay. It's like, yeah, sure, fine. Stage time, whatever. It's for charity.
Would you like me to take this $20 and just quickly run across the
No,
street?
No. No.
No?
No. I'm fine.
Okay. Just looked very pointedly at that empty.
Well, I thought it still had a little juice in it.
a little gas.
Yeah, I thought it had a little juice.
Anyway, all I was going to say is that just that there are both of those kinds of people. There are people who are awesome and maybe not all that funny that I really like and want to spend time with. And there are people who I don't like that much, but goddamn, they're funny.
Yeah.
And I find that if there's enough of those people, like the ratio of the group is still overwhelmingly pleasant.
Yeah.
So there aren't that many people I don't want to be around locally, which is really impressive to me, because in the music scene, not the same case. There
oh,
are
God.
People that were like, oh, you are a horrible person, get away from me forever.
But that's another thing that, like, when I said that people don't know how good they have it here, mm-hmm. that is not typical.
No.
Especially in a comedy scene. That is not the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
In this country and in America... it's not to say there aren't wonderful people that are great to be around
mm-hmm.
in every scene. There are.
Mm-hmm.
But this scene is disproportionate.
Yeah.
Like, it really...
overwhelmingly great.
Yeah.
Cool.
Honest to goodness. Like, like, people here, it's great that people come out to shows.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it has continued to exist the way that
mm-hmm.
it has. But at the same time, I do feel like people... they really don't, like, and that's fine. It's fine if they don't know how good they have it, but they really do have it. Amazingly good in this city. So
good.
Yeah.
No, it's true. I very rarely have gone to a show that was not incredible. So, and I think that it's
yeah.
the fact that other people are so good, more so than it being, like, really competitive or unfriendly, it really inspires people to start writing better stuff. It's because, like, the baseline is quite good.
And
so you have to stretch
yeah.
a bit.
Yeah, and there's also, I think, other scenes in the world have a very defined path to success.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't exist here.
Mm-hmm.
That's the downfall. And I've always told people that. I'm like, you come here, your act is going to get 1,000 times better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're going to become a better comedian by
mm-hmm.
living here. And there's numerous people that is 100% the case. They were from somewhere else. They came here. They got great. Then they went somewhere else. And which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But Vancouver, I'm like, you're going to get good. You're not going to make a lot of money, though. There's no, because mm-hmm. there is no path to easy. But, you know, you go to Toronto, you can, if you're a comedian with Yuck Yucks, there's a defined kind of tour world that exists
mm-hmm.
out
there's
there.
There's already a built-in structure that you
Absolutely.
Can, like, plug yourself into.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and there's TV work, and there's you can be a you know, comedian that books a lot of ads,
mm-hmm.
and there's always punch-up work and all that kind of stuff. So you can make money out there. But
mm-hmm.
if I honestly think if you're a comedian in Canada, you want to become a good comedian,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Vancouver's the place you want to be. That's not to say that there aren't great comedians in Toronto or Calgary or Winnipeg, because there absolutely are. Mm-hmm. And Halifax, but I'm like, if you want to just come in and, you know, do the Rocky montage where you become super strong and great.
The joking version of punching meat.
Yeah, yeah. You want to come punch some meat? Vancouver's the place.
You're going to punch some seitan.
Yeah. Come punch some seitan. Or, you know.
Like roasted chickpeas. Yeah. Just like pow, pow, pow.
But, you know, some people like the Kobe beef out here, you know?
Yeah.
Gotta tenderize some Kobe beef.
Fucking go in a float tank full of kombucha juice.
Yeah.
That'll be good.
Yeah.
Guys, I think that might be it.
That's amazing.
It's our 1 year. Thank you for being here,
Chris. Thanks for having me. I feel a little
bit wrung out like a washcloth.
I knew it was going to be good because I know you're good, but this was beyond. So thank you so much.
Oh, well, and congratulations on 1 year.
Thank you.
Yeah, good work.
Hopefully we'll be up at 9 someday.
Yeah. I mean, all you have to do is just keep doing it.
That was always our goal in the first place. Was like, we're going to start this, and we're going to do it for at least a year, and then hopefully we'll keep doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
and now there's like so many more people that I want to keep talking to, and then there's so many people that I want to have back, so maybe we'll have you back.
I would love to come back.
We need our own version of
Alicia
Tobin.
Me and my fancy ring, you know?
I've been looking at that the whole day and thinking, like, that belongs on your hand.
Yeah.
It's perfect. And you know what I wish would make it even better is if it flipped open and you could, like, store secrets in it.
A little cocaine.
Just a tiny bit of that old-style cocaine.
Ladies.
Good stuff.
Well, that's it for us.
Do we need to do plug stuff, or...
Listen to Stop Podcasting Yourself and go to the Laugh Gallery at Havana on Monday nights at 9 p.m.
And the latest track on our debut album,
You
play cello on... Which everybody, you know, that's written to us, they love the cello.
Oh, that's so nice.
They think it's just such a nice addition to kind of a sad, it's kind of a sad song.
Yeah.
And I think the cello is like it was the perfect touch.
It's the most emotional instrument.
Yeah. You hit that note where I listened to the whole episode and was just like, immediately you were like, yeah, I'm thinking the cello, it's like low, it's kind of sad. Like,
yeah.
So yeah, thanks for thinking of me and letting me do it, because it was actually so fun to record with you guys.
Oh, well,
so.
Thanks for coming and doing it. And you did a great job.
Thank you for the quid pro quo.
Yay. All right, see you next week. Bye.